Welcome to Hey YA! From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA! Is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA! Is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azzafetti and me, Tirza Price. We are recording this on March 24th. And before I dive in, I wanted to tell you a little bit about a new thing we've got going on over at Book Riot. So if you're looking for fascinating news stories, informed takes, useful advice, and just more interesting deep dives from the world of books and reading, then you should subscribe to Book Riot's newest newsletter, The Deep Dive, and you'll get exclusive content delivered to your inbox. So you can subscribe and choose your membership level at bookriot.substack.com. So basically what we're doing is we are tapping the experts to share just more in-depth insight based off of their years of knowledge about books and publishing. We're also looking for experiences from readers and book curators and research on lesser known histories to illuminate and inspire book lovers. So subscriptions start at $5 a month, and you can get this deep dive edition in your new inbox twice a month. If you are on the fence or you just want to check us out before committing, there is a free subscription. It's called the Splash Pad, and it rounds up some of our experts' recommended reading and bookish lifestyle goods monthly. So again, that's bookriot.substack.com. Hello, Erica.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing well. You know, about to get into spring, which is cute, except for the pollening, as I've seen it called.
The great pollening, yes.
The great pollening. I don't know if you suffer from allergies. I have allergies all the time, but spring is like, times 10.
I get fall allergies. The ragweed comes out and I'm done.
The raggedy ragweed.
Yes. Yes. But I can sympathize because, oh my gosh, it is the worst. And it's like all, it, like you wake up one day and you're like, wait, what?
Excuse me? Yep. Before we started recording, I know I mentioned I just ordered Flonase. I'm waiting for it to arrive.
You gotta prep.
So that's that. But yeah. I know we've got some interesting adaptation news.
Yes. Amazon has ordered a series based off of the YA novel We Were Liars by Eve Lockhart. Just a little book you might have heard of.
Just a little one. Yeah.
And we were so funny because right before we started recording, Erica had asked, like, how long has that book been out? And I was like, forever. 2014. So almost 10 years. But I'm going to feel like a dinosaur being like, well, I remember when that book came out. But I do remember when that book came out, though, because there were arcs that were very exclusive. Mm. And this was kind of coming off of like the success of Gone Girl, where it was like an entire marketing plan was built around being like, there's a twist. Don't tell anybody what the twist is. And so I just remember everybody being like, you know, doing their galley brags and being like, have you read We Were Liars yet? And oh my God, what did you think of the twist? But don't spoil it. And it was a very effective marketing plan as far as like getting people like piped about the book. But I also feel like sometimes when you know that there's going to be a big twist coming, like, you know, you go in hyper-vigilant and, like, looking and trying to, like, guess every little plot twist. I'm not saying this to be insufferable, but, like, I did figure out the twist on, like, page 30.
I don't know why that is so funny. I'm not saying this to be insufferable, but, like, I did see it coming a mile away. So all of you other girls conceive.
Right? Well, I'm like, I don't know if I would have seen it coming if I had like gone into that book just like not knowing anything about it, just being like, this is a great book. There might be a little bit of a mystery to it. But yeah, as I was paying attention and like, yeah, page 30, I was like, oh, it's this. And then I mean, like, it didn't ruin the enjoyment of the book for me because then I wanted to know if I was right. So I was like speeding through the book to see if I was right. And then when I found out I was right, I was like looking to see how it was pulled off. Mm-hmm. But I also met plenty of people who were like totally shocked by the twist. So but we were also talking about the fact that like Wikipedia calls it a horror novel. And I'm like, it is not horror.
It's not giving horror.
But I think because, like, nobody wants to, you can't describe it too much without giving away the twist. And maybe 9 years away from release, like, you know, the term limit on like, keeping that twist a secret has expired. I don't know. I'm not going to say it, though, in case anybody yeah. hasn't seen it or hasn't read it. Because I do think people are discovering YA books, even older ones, all the time.
Yeah, I know we were talking about, like, why now? Like, so many other YA novels have been adapted, and this one was super popular, so it seems like it took them. It's just been a minute. So, yeah. I mean, it's cool. It'll be interesting to see.
I'm sure that the fact that TikTok made this book explode and it's been on the New York, it was very popular when it came out, and I'm sure it was a bestseller when it came out. I don't have the data in front of me to like confirm and tell you definitively, but then like I think it fell off the New York Times bestseller list for a while, and then like TikTok made it popular, so then it was back on for like something insane, like 26 weeks in a row. Yeesh. So yeah, like it's just a lot. And then there was the prequel that came out, and so I'm sure like all of that kind of has been like a nice little boost, because we know that
boost.
Yeah. We know that Hollywood likes to make money. So if something is making money in the book world, but I agree with you. I am surprised it kind of took this long. Yeah. And in fact, I think like the joke was when the news came out was like, wait, wasn't this already optioned? But
I kind of thought it was already adapted, honestly. I was like, wait, again?
What? Yeah. Yeah. And it might have been optioned beforehand, but like now Amazon is like actually ordering the series. So it's because like options are like, it might happen, it's in development. And then like somebody ordering a series is like, no, now we go like from in development to like, now we're going to start shooting. So
yeah, that's probably what it is. Cause that can be confusing. Like when you're looking at it, it'll be like, oh, they bought the rights or la la la. And then it doesn't get made. And then it getting made is a separate thing. So, yeah. Right. So, it'll be interesting.
Oh, other can of worms. Yeah. But I'll be curious to see how this goes. And I'll be curious to see, too, like, you know, if they, how closely they stick to the book and how they tell the story. Because it is a very interesting story that moves back and forth between two timelines and has a pretty big secret. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
That kind of sounds like our book we're going to discuss today.
I know. The book that broke my heart.
Oh, my God. I did want to mention one other little newsy piece, and that is Kodansha, the publisher of manga, very popular manga. They're launching a manga app this May. So it's just like a couple months, and they've published manga like Attack on Titan, Ghost in the Shell, Sailor Moon, Akira, Fairy Tale, Tokyo Avengers, Blue Lock. So just like super duper popular ones. And I think it says they're going to start off with 400 titles. If it's like the Shonen, I think the Shonen Jump or Shonen one I have, that's only like $2 a month. So I'm excited for this. If it's comparable pricing, I'll be excited to see. So manga readers out there, there's that for you. So that should be fun, I think.
Yay for accessibility.
Exactly.
And then just a quick follow-up before we go to our first sponsor. I want to say that I did finally watch all of season 2 of Shadow and Bone last week. Yes. I know. I so badly wanted to just, like, marathon it, but, like, my life right now would not allow me to set aside, like, 9 straight hours to do that. Unfortunately, like, what is having a job and responsibilities?
What's the point of being an adult if you can't watch a show for 9 hours straight? Like, what? Like, why?
Thank you. But I watched it over the course of, like, 3 or 4 days. Oh, my gosh. It was so super good. It was super good. And I liked the way they left it. I'm desperately waiting for them to announce that it's been renewed. I hope it will be. It was, like, number one worldwide, though. So it has to be renewed, I hope.
Yeah.
But, like, when it comes to Netflix, I never...
You never know.
You never know. So I'm holding my breath, hoping, praying, please... to all the saints that it gets renewed. And it surprised me a little bit in the direction that it went in, but also, you know, when you combine two books and two very different plot lines and two different casts of characters, obviously you're going to have to change some things up. So I'm just very hopeful that we get another season, because where they left us was very exciting.
That's nice. I still have not watched it. But it's on my, I've been watching other stuff. It's on my to be watched. So that might be the thing I get into this weekend.
Yes.
I'm always looking for more stuff to watch. Because we are, you helped me map out my Leigh Bardugo YA plan. Like, watch that and then read Six of Crows. Like, I got my whole plan. I got it planned out. It's mapped out. So just got to execute it.
Yes.
But yeah. Sounds fun. Sounds like, yeah, sounds like a whole thing for me to do over the weekend.
Yeah. I approve. Okay. Well, we are going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her soul family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more sus when he and Xu Wei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what? What's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romantasy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. And let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
All right, so I'm excited for is this like the third time that we've done a little book club read for book together? Yeah, I think it's always really fun because if you are a frequent listener to this podcast, you know Eric and I love to talk. So
hello.
Yeah, it's nice when we can talk about one book instead of forcing ourselves to like get through like, you know, 5 to 8 books. And so we're just going to talk about this one book. But our book club pick for this season is All My Rage by Sabaa Tahir, which is the National Book Award winner, the Prince Award winner, has been getting all of the accolades and praise and hype. Mm-hmm. And I'm embarrassed to admit that I hadn't read it before we decided that we wanted to do it for the show. But I was like, this will be a good excuse because it had just won the Prince when we decided that we wanted to pick it. And I was like, I have to read the Prince Award winner. And oh my God, it ripped my heart out.
Yo, I didn't know how real this was gonna get. You know, like the little summary or whatever was cute. She didn't get into it though. She left. I was like, all right, it's a family saga, you know, things get real, okay. And you know, a few pages into it, I was like, all right, okay, I can see, like, you know, it's rough, like his mom is sick, and la la la. But then it started like snowballing, and I was like, wait, slow down. I need some water.
I know. Well, and like they don't really give you a lot of details about the plot if you look up the marketing or like what the book is about on the publisher's website or on Amazon or something like that. Even on the front cover, it's a little bit vague. And so it's kind of hard to know like what exactly you're getting into. Like they mostly give you like vibes and a setting.
Yeah.
And the flap of this book is just basically like, heartbreak, betrayal, forgiveness, and you're gonna cry a ton. And I'm like, okay, I'm into this, but you're right, like, you get into it and you're like, oh my gosh, where is this going to go? And you get a certain point and you're like, okay, I think I know where this is going to go, but like, that's not cool, I'm not happy about this. It's gonna break your heart, but in a good way, I would say.
Kind of cathartic or something.
Yeah.
Oof. So because of the reasons you just said, which is that, like, not a lot is given away in the, like, official book blurbs and the book jackets and stuff. The first part of, like, our discussion is going to be, like, generally, like, setting up the characters and stuff. And then, because this is a book club episode, we're going to get into some spoilery things. So heads up on that. But basically, I have the book here, so if you hear some rustling, I'm just looking, because I put my little, what do you call these little sticky doodads in the book?
Are they your little flags?
Yeah, the little flags. I couldn't think of the name. Thank you. because some of these phrases, honey, Miss Tahir, Sabah, some of these turns of phrase, I was like, ooh, dang, ooh, they were hitting. So I was like, all right, let me flag some of these real quick, fast. But basically, it's about Salahuddin and Noor, who are best friends. They've been best friends forever, and they are two Muslim people, and they are living in this, like, small town in California. It's called Juniper, and they kind of, like, because of the lack of diversity in the rest of the town, they've kind of were, like, kind of forced together in a way, but when we meet them, we see that Noor is stressed out because she's trying to get into school. And we see early on that her uncle is, like, kind of weird about religion. Like, he doesn't want her to practice being a Muslim. He's, like, ashamed of it, kind of, basically. And she has to work in his liquor store. And he takes care of her, basically, because she was orphaned by an earthquake that hit Pakistan years ago. Then Salahuddin, his mother runs their hotel, and she's sick. So, and then also we find out that Salahuddin and Noor, as I said before, they were, like, super duper besties, but something awkward happened, and Salahuddin's response to Noor, like, it was really awkward and off-putting, and she got mad at him, so they're not talking. And that's basically where the book opens up. Let me know if I've missed anything.
No, that's about right. Yeah, they both kind of feel like outcasts, even though Salahuddin sometimes fits in a little bit better. He's got, like, a white girlfriend at the beginning of the book, and Noor, she's just a very angry person, and for good reason. I mean, I too would be angry if I lost my entire family in a tragic natural disaster at age 6 and then was whisked away to a different country to live by my uncle, who doesn't really want to take care of me and forces me to work in his liquor store and is emotionally abusive. Like, that would be very angering.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the book starts. And then at the beginning of the book, we learn that Salahuddin's mother, Misbah, is very ill. And she's been ill for a number of months. They know that she's ill, but she refuses to go to the doctor and get the treatment she needs because they do not have health insurance. The motel is basically their only source of income because Salahuddin's father is an alcoholic and has lost his job. And so she's not doing very well, and Noor is visiting her when she collapses. And basically within, like, the first 50 pages or so of the book, Misbah dies. Mm-hmm. And it's very sad. That's, like, the very first sad thing that happens in the book, where you're just like,
oh, of the first of many. Mm-hmm.
Of many. Yeah. Like, yeah. So know that this book starts out with some sadness, and it just kind of goes from there. And, you know, the one bright spot, if it can be called a bright spot, of Misbah's death is that Salahuddin really needs somebody, and he needs Noor. And so they kind of call a little bit of a truce on their standoff, and they start talking again. And Noor will come over to the motel and help him out around the motel. Salahuddin will talk to her at school. They kind of have, like, this very wary understanding of like, okay, this really awful thing happened. We both miss, you know, your mom, but we'll help each other out. But that's not it, because of course, Salahuddin is basically the only one trying to keep the motel afloat. And he wants to keep it afloat to honor his mom. Noor wants to go off to college. They both want these things very badly, and they both feel extremely out of reach, and they both make some decisions to try to get what they want. And they don't always communicate with each other. Yeah. And then things get pretty intense. So I don't know if we want to kind of end our non-spoilerly version of this chat right here, just to say, like, I mean, I will just say this real quick. I love the book. I thought it was beautiful. One of the things that I really love about it is that we got chapters from Misbah's point of view. So she...
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, she kind of like pops in here and there. Most of the book alternates between Noor and Salahuddin. And then we get Misbah every now and then. And it starts off with Misbah at like age 18 when she finds out that she's been engaged to be married. It's an arranged marriage. And then it kind of goes throughout the years. And, oh, it's so beautiful because you definitely get a different perspective on, you know, the past and history. And you can understand why we've ended up where we've ended up. But it also is kind of heartbreaking at the same time. So I love it.
I love that, too. I love Misbah's. It could have worked with just Noor and Salahuddin's perspectives, like the alternating chapters that it like will, you know, alternate between their perspectives between the chapters. But Misbah's chapters, and they're always like just very like short, kind of like a sprinkling. I feel like that just sent it over the edge. Like, I love that it showed the context for especially Salahuddin's father, like the history of that is revealed, of that, like that as in his, you know, the origins of his alcoholism and stuff like that. But I like that there's this parallel between that's drawn between Misbah and Noor and Salahuddin, because they're showing Misbah when she was their age, as opposed to just showing her as the now, which is, you know, their or Salahuddin's 40 something year old mother. So I like that it showed the three of them about around the same age. So I really like that. I will also say, before we get into the spoiler section of this discussion, that I also really liked it. I was telling Tirza before we started recording that a couple of times I had to put the book down to cry, because I was just, it was like really, it was really intense. Trigger warnings. That. Trigger warnings. And it was rage inducing, because I was so, I was like, all right, all my rage. Yeah, because I want to talk to some people. I want to call the police. I want to fight someone. I want to get confrontational. I'm mad. Like, this is, you know, such injustice. But so the title fits. You Will Cry. Yes. Great book. As I said earlier, some beautiful writing. Just all around well done. So that's my piece on that.
Yeah. So before we dive into the more spoilerly parts of this chat, I would like to just share the content warnings that are actually at the front of the book. So if you don't have a copy of the book in front of you, or if you're kind of like, oh, maybe you like spoilers and you just want to listen to us talk about this book before you pick it up, know that All My Rage includes drug and alcohol addiction. There's physical abuse. There's Islamophobia. There's mentions of repressed sexual assault. The sexual assault does not occur on the page, though. And then there's also some tense exchanges with law enforcement, terminal illness, and death of a parent. So, actually, multiple deaths of a parent. I'm so sorry. But, yeah. So, those are our content warnings. So, just FYI. But, yes. Oh, my goodness. Where do we even begin, Erica?
Where? Actually, before we do, so we can just get like real good and comfortable, why don't we hear from our sponsor real quick, and then we'll come right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge strategy and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and, oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by Katie Hoffman. The pressure cooker of minor league baseball leads to major chemistry in this exhilarating, sexy, and triumphant rivals to lovers debut romance. Gene Ionescu is the first openly trans player in professional baseball. He has nearly everything he's ever let himself dream of. That is, until Luis Estrada, Gene's former teammate and current rival, gets traded to the Beavers. Now, Gene and Luis can't manage a civil conversation off the field or a competent play on it, but in the close confines of dugout benches and roadie buses, they begrudgingly rediscover a comfortable rhythm. As the two grow closer, the tension between them turns electric and their chemistry spills past the confines of the stadium. So this is one of the first adult rom-coms published by a major publishing house centering a gay trans man by a gay trans man. It also has ADHD and anxiety representation and some joyful, heartfelt moments. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by Katie Hoffman, for sponsoring this episode.
All right, Tirza, where do we begin? Where do we begin, Tirza? I started trying to take notes and I was like, this ain't gonna work. Cause like I said, I started getting my feelings. I will say sometimes the trigger warnings, like I don't read them cause I'll be like, I'll be all right. Like I don't wanna, I wanna be surprised. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they exist for a reason. So I'm not knocking them. Of course, I think they're good. And, you know, just for me, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go into this. I saw it said trigger warnings. And I was like, all right, some, you know, some real stuff's about to happen. But I didn't read what they were. So I didn't fully see them coming. I knew something was going on with Noor.
Yeah.
She was like sore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing that I think, like, almost going back and doing a second reading, you would kind of benefit from like picking up on those little nuances and those little hints and details, because both Noor and Salahuddin have had these like very horrible, traumatic, awful physical things happen to them.
Yeah.
And you don't quite understand or know like what the root cause of that is, but the author is definitely dropping hints throughout the book. And so, you know, you might not get it by like page 30, but like by page 130, you're like, oh, it's starting to like come together. And that's kind of, it's almost like why this book is even more of a, like an emotional gut punch, because then you're like, oh, like she doesn't come out and say, you know, Nora's being physically abused by her uncle.
I feel like, and I like how it was revealed, because I remember like the first, okay, let me back up a little bit. The mental part of it for Noor, when she would start to resent her uncle, like, you know, she's trying to work hard. She's working hard in school. She has to come to this raggedy old liquor store and work there with these handed, you know, hand-me-down, busted down things he'd just be throwing at her, you know, as a second thought. And I remember the first couple times, like she would start to, like the anger would start to build up in her surrounding him. And she would like basically repeat this mantra in her head. Like, there was an earthquake in Pakistan 10 years ago and everyone died and my uncle saved me and his nails were ripped out. And they said there was no point. The rescuer said there was no point, but he kept digging and he saved me and I owe my life to him. Like, the first time she's, you know, that's revealed, it's like, okay, so I guess he kind of does care for her. And so then the second time she says it, you're like, wait a minute. This sounds like some kind of coping thing. So I like how that was introduced because it's like, to someone who doesn't know, we don't know what's going on with Noor, not yet. Noor knows, you know, we're being shown this slowly. But to someone else, like say if you were Noor's friend in real life and she told you about her uncle and she said that part, you'd be like, oh my God, that was so like heroic of him. That was so nice. Because she's in denial. In denial and also protecting herself as she can, as she's able to in her situation. And so I think that part and other parts of the book, it shows how like you can know someone in real life and they're being abused, whether it's sexually, mentally, physically, or all the above. And these hints are dropped, but it's hard to really know. Like say you find out down the line that these horrible things were happening to them this whole time. And you start to feel guilt like, oh, how could I not have seen it? How did I not know? I wish I would have helped them, et cetera, et cetera. But this is how it is. Like, you know, people will try to protect themselves and they'll be kind of deceptive about it for various reasons. Noor had no other family. So it's like, if he went to jail, where would she go? And also his part of his abuse was telling her that and making her know that she would be treated like crap. And honestly, the way our Children's Protective Services is, she probably would have been treated like crap. Like, she's a brown Muslim girl who wants to pray. And, you know, she wants to participate in her culture and her religion. She wants to remember that and honor that. And we saw from the rest of the town that wasn't tolerated by everyone. But I like how Sabati here, how that was built up. Like I said, at first, it's like, oh, he's this great guy. All right. Like, okay, he's a little cold. You know, maybe he's a little quirky. Like, maybe he's just like not naturally warm, but he's a good person underneath it all. And then the second time she says it, you're like, okay, now hold up a minute. And the third time you're like, now wait a minute. Something's wrong here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like she was definitely trying to convince herself and/or, you know, hide the fact that, you know, he's terrible, but she has nobody else, and that is sad. And the way that was done was really beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time. You also talked about how much Noor wants to pray, and that is one thing that I really enjoyed about this book was its treatment of religion and faith and how different people, you know, view religion and faith, because Noor is a faithful person and she is, you know, a bit more, she's more of a practicing, you know, person of her faith, whereas Salahuddin, not quite as much. And then, of course, her uncle thinks that it's just, you know, religion is terrible. And he berates her for believing in religion. And he, you know, her uncle is also the type of person who wouldn't let her speak anything but English, doesn't want her to be taking part in anything that, you know, harkens back to Pakistan, like just completely wants to assimilate into American culture. And that is also abusive, I would say, because, you know, this, we're talking about a kid who at six lost everything and then was plucked out of her, you know, homeland and brought to a new country and then basically told, like, assimilate or I will, you know, beat you. And
literally.
Yeah. And then she had no choice. But she does have Misbah, who, you know, doesn't recognize necessarily that Noor is being physically abused, but knows that her uncle is not good for her and tries to, you know, be a mother to her in any way that she can and be kind and generous to her. And that is lovely. But yeah, it's sad, but I also really liked that there, like, some prominent characters in the book were like faith leaders and people in the community looking out for Noor and Salahuddin.
Speaking of faith leaders and Muslim Islam and stuff like that, I like how they showed like each like either Muslim or Pakistani person was a different representation of Pakistan and Islam. Like, everyone had their own different thing going on. And so it's like, it's not just, and this is not to minimize this at all, but it's not just like, you know, Muslim women wearing hijabs and being harassed. But I mean, there is that too. and people trying to practice their faith, you have like different versions. You have Mizpah, who is this kind, like motherly figure who is very spiritual and believes in God and like makes it kind of poetic when she talks about it. Then you have Khadija, who I think is, if I recall correctly, is Black American. And there are significantly fewer Black American Muslims. So she has her own set of experiences and stuff that comes with that. I believe her husband was Pakistani, but I don't remember. Khadija is an attorney. Khadija's husband is the imam of their little, it's a very small gathering they have. And then you have Noor, who I think Noor kind of subverts that idea of, or that trope, or whatever you want to call it, of this kid who came from another country and is different and brown and practices a different religion and eats different food. A lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times we see people, like people at that age, because they don't fit in, they want to reject their culture, their religion, or whatever, but she wants to embrace it. Like, she goes out of her way to do so and like risks her uncle's wrath in doing so. Then you have her uncle, who is, so people, different communities of color have certain words, they're derogatory, that refer to people from that community who want to be white, like who shun their culture and want to be white. I know the term for a Pakistani person who does that. I'm not going to say it because it's disrespectful, but that's what he is. It's like, not only does he want to leave his culture behind and become American, he wants to be white American. It's a very specific kind of thing. Then you have Salahuddin, who's kind of more casual with it. So I like all the different representations of Muslims and, you know, former Muslims and Pakistanis and just everything surrounding that. I think everyone gave, like, all together, it was a nuanced representation of it.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I'm enjoying seeing more YA books that tackle faith and in discussions of faith. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say like, oh, there have been a serious lack, because there's been a lot that do that from like the Christian perspective.
Yeah.
But I appreciate seeing that in with Muslim characters, with Jewish characters, just seeing that, you know, it's a book that's not about religion and it's not about religious faith, because there are some YA books that really do center the plot around religion. I don't think this one does that, but like, it is a part of the character's life and it's a part of the character. And I think that that is really cool to see. And just to like also normalize, because, you know, they live in a small town. They don't even have a mosque there. They share a room with like the Jewish folks, and they, you know, so that they're very, it's a very small place where they're just sharing a space, but yet there's still a community there. And I think that that aspect would be, you know, somewhat understandable for people who grow up or live in small towns. Like, I live in a small town where, you know, we don't also have synagogues or mosques, but yeah. I wouldn't say that there aren't Muslim or Jewish people who live in my town. So it's nice to see that representation in a small town as well. So that maybe, you know, teens who grow up in these small towns and they just think like all there is are Christian churches, and there are probably like 15 churches in my town, that they understand that like that's not all that there is, and these, you know, faith communities do exist in small towns as well. So yeah, I really liked seeing that.
Yeah. I want to ask you, so I think Noor's thing I saw coming not early on, like when the hint started to drop, because I mean, before the hint started to drop, I was like, you would have to be like clairvoyant to see it, to know. But yeah, like, you knew something was wrong because her uncle was just a nasty piece of work from the beginning anyway. But with Salahuddin, I actually thought, ooh, that's the one where I was like, all right, I gotta put this down. Salahuddin, I thought actually that he was neurodivergent. I thought he was on the spectrum maybe, because he didn't like to be touched and because he had a certain aversion to different smells. I thought it was going to go that direction for a time. And then I was like, oh no, it's not that.
I also was kind of wondering about that because I was like, you know, he doesn't like to be touched. Okay. Yeah. What's, you know, what's his deal? And You know, but I wasn't sure because, you know, obviously she wasn't coming out and saying that.
Yeah.
But then when we find out in Mispah's point of view chapter what really happened to Salahuddin, and he doesn't know. That's what's so, like, I guess heartbreaking about it is something horrible happens to Salahuddin when he's a very young child, and Mispah has chosen not to tell him about it. So now he's a teenager who's averse to touch, and his body remembers. But he does not. And I, you know, that got me too, because I think that there's could be fewer things that are worse than knowing that something bad happened, but not knowing at the same time. And that surprised me. I didn't see the book going in that direction.
Yeah, there was with you saying that, I want to share for a second. Like, I think there is a book called The Body.
Oh, The Body Keeps Score?
Yeah, I was going to say The Body Remembers. I'm like, that's not the name of the book. The Body Keeps Score. So I worked as a sexual assault and domestic violence victim advocate, like when I lived in New York City and also when I lived in Albany for like a spell, like in 2019. And when I was getting trained for it a second time, because a few years had passed since the first training, there was this physical therapy clinic or whatever. And they realized they kept getting these patients who had these physical, you know, ailments, but that could not be solved. And eventually they realized that it was actually like psychological trauma that was manifesting as physical pain. And so they started referring them to psychologists. But for a time it was like, what is going on? Like, you know, their bodies are not responding to the physical therapy, the treatment. So it's like they still have these physical pain. So it's just interesting, like physical, like trauma, like it's a physical thing, like emotional abuse. It turns into this physical thing that lies, like manifests and becomes incarnate in your body. And I mean, that has, I don't know, I think it has interesting implications for, I think if you widen the scope and you look at like things that affect big groups at a time, like slavery, like how Indigenous people were treated, you know, residential schools, sexual assault. When you think of it like that, I feel like, I don't know, I think we should think of trauma, we should start thinking of trauma as like a physical assault, you know what I mean? Even when it's not physical. When it is physical and when it's not, like even after it has happened, even after time has passed, it still can like be rooted in your psyche and take hold of your physical body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of tying into like the whole theme of this book is just like the trauma and what we hold on to and learning how to forgive. And some things maybe are unforgivable. Like, I'm not saying that Noor needs to necessarily forgive her horrible uncle or Salahuddin needs to forgive the person who hurt him, but there is a cost to holding on to that.
Yes.
Those feelings and that rage. And as Noor learns at the end of the book, when she thinks that she's near the end of the book, she thinks she's moved on, but then it just keeps coming back and she realizes that she can't let it go because she hasn't dealt with it.
Yeah. And that's the thing too with like, speaking of letting things go and forgiving, I feel like I see forgiving as like you're not mad about it, not necessarily that you're buddy-buddy with the person who wronged you. I don't know if that is the correct interpretation though, but like it's not like on your mind, like it's not making you angry still. And that's an interesting thing, like when Salahuddin, all right, so the some of the characters in here, they're holding on to things that upset them that happened to other people. But they're holding on for themselves. By that, I mean, like, Salahuddin, he starts selling drugs because he's trying to save his mother's dream. But when we realize, and I think Noor helps him, like, realize this, is that his mother would not have wanted him to sacrifice himself for a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't have wanted that. She would have been like, you know, sell it if you have to. Like, it's not that. But he wants to hold on to it because he felt like he failed her. And he wants to try to hold on to something that reminds him of her, that she put her heart into. But meanwhile, she wouldn't have even wanted him to do all that just for a hotel. And then his father is caught up in the misery of what happened to Salahuddin. Because we know, like, he had issues with alcoholism a little, like, he has a family history of it.
His downward spiral.
Yeah, that was really initiated by Salahuddin when he was assaulted as a young child. And it's like his father is holding on to that pain of that happening to Salahuddin. And in the meantime, he's not being a father to his son. So it's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah, man. Just thinking about all of this is like hitting me in the feels again. This yep. book. Ugh. So I know we've been talking for a while. What did you think of the ending and Salahuddin's decision?
Wait, which decision?
To speak before the judge.
Oh, yeah, he had to do that.
He did.
He had to do that. I was surprised his attorney was like, yep, it was Noor. I'm like, bro, your conscience, where is it? Where's your conscience, sir?
I know. And the fact that he was like, well, I have to defend you. So even though you're telling me that, like, Noor didn't have anything to do with the drugs that were in your car, I'm going to throw her under the bus to defend you. Even though that's not what my client wants. I was like, oh, that's so shady. But
some of them are like that for real.
Yeah. So, no, and I agree. Like, that was like the only thing for Salahuddin to do. I expected that he would do it. But I think, like, the suspense in that moment was, like, will it be enough to redeem his relationship with Noor? And it's, you know, in the moment, like, he's not sure. And it takes months for her to even figure out if she wants to have that redemption with him.
And that makes sense. I mean, in the end, I don't blame him for selling the drugs, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, what was he supposed to do? Like, if he... 'Cause didn't they also live at the hotel?
They did, yeah. So he would have been out of home.
Yeah. No food.
Yeah. He was definitely in an impossible decision. And I'm like not condoning his decision to sell drugs because as he finds out, his ex-girlfriend takes drugs that he sells to her and she's in a very bad accident. And it's not a good situation. And it kind of breaks home to him the idea that, like, he is responsible for what happens when people are mm-hmm. on these drugs. And if they are hurt or killed or, you know, they hurt or kill somebody else. And it freaks him out, which it should. It should definitely be that very serious, like, come to reality moment.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, like, what were his choices? Like, yeah. So I'm not condoning his choices, but I understand why he made the choices he did. And he owns it at the end, and I appreciated that.
Yeah. I feel like that's a part of, like, being a minority in a poor area. Like, if you want to survive, what's available to you? So, yeah, it's not, like, a good thing to do, but it's also, like, this is what happens in rundown towns, in places that don't have a lot of job availability, that don't have good children protective services, that don't have good education, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, you know, that's like par for the course with that. And it was a horrible situation that he was in.
Oh, I love too that he called out the white kid who was distributing to him.
Oh, yeah. He was like the cousin of the girl, of his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. And he's like, why do you do this? Like, you know it hurts people. You don't need the money. You're just doing this for, like, extra money because you want to, like, live an interesting life. Like, you need to stop. And I mean, I appreciated that he called him out like that because it's true.
Yeah. No, and then the guy was like, oh, I guess you're right. Also, what did you think of, this is kind of a more minor point. What did you think of once Salahuddin was actually in jail? And I'm glad that that went as smoothly as it did, because I was also scared about him being in prison.
Oh, my God. Me too.
I was like, oh, my God. My heart can't take it. I can't take no more. But I'm glad he met up with the dude. It was kind of, I don't know, serendipitous. But, I mean, things like that happen in real life. I'm not even saying that that's not, you know, realistic or anything. But he seemed like he had a good cellmate or whatever. Once he had to get in a couple fights. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Listen, so what did you think? I felt like, why did the doctor, remember the doctor was trying to tell him about what happened to him when he was a kid?
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that a real thing? And I'm like, okay, first of all, she kept calling him before he got arrested and was like, oh, I'm not trying to tell, you know, I'm not trying to, like, bill you for your mother's hospital stay. I want to tell you something else. about your unique medical history. I'm like, do doctors do that? Because I'm like, what would compel her to do that? And then also, in addition to that question, I'm like, why would she tell him that when he's in jail?
Yeah.
Isn't that the worst time to learn that?
That's an interesting thing. I mean, it seems like she was very well-intentioned and she knew. Because at that point, Salahuddin, he would have been 18, right?
Yeah, 18 or something like that. 18, 19 maybe.
I couldn't remember exactly how old he was at the point when he goes to jail, but he probably was tried as an adult because he didn't go to like a juvenile detention center.
Yeah.
I'm sure that she knew that like his mother was never going to tell him. And then once she died and he was 18, she maybe felt like she was morally responsible for at least offering to tell him.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that he opted not to be told. He said like, you know, basically, I know you know what happened to me, but I don't need you to tell me because I know. I don't know exactly what happened, but like my body knows that something bad happened. And I appreciated that she was like, you should talk to somebody, like you can, you know, go to therapy for this. But yeah, that was the one bit of little doctor meddling that made me wonder, like, would doctors actually do that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe small town pediatricians would.
You're right. I mean, that's a good point. Because it did say how, like, she was his family doctor since forever. And, yeah, I think he saw her at the hospital when his mother was, like, right before his mother passed away. So maybe that's when she remembered or something. Or got into her head to do that. I kind of felt like he was going to deal with it once he got out of prison, like go to therapy, whatever. But because I was like, yeah, that's not something you want to learn when you're confined to a box with other people.
Right.
Like you need to have space to like, and you're like not just confined to a box with other people, but you're on the schedule. You're being told what to do. You can't vent. You can't, you know what I mean? Like that's not the time. Also, another question. So it's revealed that like he's like at the end, he's like writing this book, basically, like he's writing down his mother's experiences. So he shows Noor, I think, what like his mother's stories and he that he's written like from her perspective. And I believe it was like the first sentence of the book of this book that we read, like the opening lines where it's like from Mizpah's perspective. So I'm like, is it implying that he is the author of the whole book or just her writing?
Oh, you see interesting. What I'm saying? Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think that the author was implying that like he was writing her sections or like chapters of her, the chapters that we read that were from her point of view was like what he was working on.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think that's what I meant. But at the same time, I'm okay with it being like a little bit ambiguous there.
Yeah, same. I feel the same.
Oh my gosh, when Noor was started sending him books while he was in prison. Yeah. Oh my god, my heart.
He was like, no one else would do this.
I know. And she sent him so many books and it was so, so lovely. I really appreciated that little aspect. And that's kind of like the way that they find their way back to each other. And he knows that she's like open to forgiveness because she doesn't write him. She doesn't call him, but she sends him books while he's in prison.
I felt that because it's like, say you're like really upset with someone. And I've been like this too, where I'm like, I really don't want to speak to them. I don't want to hear their voice, but I want to make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
Like I want them to be like safe and not like in emotional, you know, distress. But I also don't feel like speaking to them right now. Like I want them to know that they have someone if stuff gets hectic or serious, but also like don't call me unless it's an emergency.
Right. And like that was the only way that she could really look after him or make sure that he was okay, because she's, you know, the fact that he's in prison, it's completely out of her control, but she could send him books. And I just that was like one of the little details that just really grabbed at my heart. So such a beautiful book.
Yeah, it was.
So wonderful. I love intergenerational stories. Mm. I love stories like this. And this one, I feel like it's a heartbreaker, but it's also a heart mender because, you feel like so just emotionally wrung out about this book, but then at the same time, like, it fills you back up again.
Yeah, absolutely. One last thing I just realized. I think Salahuddin's father, I think his name is Tufik.
Mm-hmm.
I gagged when that reveal, they were like, his mom was a sex worker. I was like, oh, because, you know, back then, it's like, that's super duper taboo. And she was an alcoholic and they're Muslim. So it's like, you know, you're not supposed to drink, much less, you know, have an alcohol problem. But I remember one of those times his mom, that's Tufik's mom, got, this is a Misbah chapter, of course. One of those times his mom got drunk, she was like, you know, I was a sex worker. Well, that's not what she said. She said something else. But she said that, basically. She revealed that. And then she said how her husband saved her and Tufik. And I was like, oh, so did she have Tufik before? So, like, is Tufik the son of one of her clients? That was just, like, a random small thought I have. I was like,
Oh, yeah. I definitely read that as, you know, her husband was Tufik's, you know, stepfather. But, you know, was definitely claiming Tufik as his son.
Yeah.
And yeah, they never tell you who Tufik's father really was. But yeah, such a sad family history. But also, I think a good sort of demonstration of like the struggle of addiction. It does pass through genetically, and that's really hard.
Yeah, I feel, it was genetic and also trauma-based. Because then there's intergenerational trauma. Like, my aunt was telling me how, like, and again, I think she was talking about this in the context of slavery, but it applies to any super big, you know, traumatic thing, like war, famine, whatever. Like, the trauma of it changes, like, cells undergo methylation. I forgot how to say it. Methylization. Something with the methyl group. Darn it.
Mm-hmm.
It basically changes some aspects of your genes and you pass that on to your kids. So it's like, again, the idea of trauma becoming manifest and becoming physical and being this physical thing rather than only an emotional disturbance, and you passing that on to your kids and then them having to deal with something that they didn't experience, but that you did. So I felt like that was kind of also a theme in the book as well.
Yeah, definitely. All the generational trauma, how difficult it is to kind of break free of that cycle.
Yes, the cycle, exactly. Tufik did not break free of that cycle.
No, but hopefully Salahuddin and Nora do. So, oh. But I feel hopeful for them. We leave them in a hopeful place.
At least there's that. I had to listen to like some music, some Beyonce or something after this last night. I was like, oof, yeah, that was a lot. So I could go to sleep.
Yes.
I was so upset. But like, yeah. At least, like you said, it did end on a very hopeful note. So there's that.
There's at least that. So if you haven't read this book, hopefully all of our talk about how traumatizing and deep and heavy it was doesn't turn you off, because it really is an excellent, beautiful book with just gorgeous line level writing. And it will make your heart feel full after reading it. So definitely do pick up a copy. Now, I'm curious, real quick, have you read Sabaa Tahir's other YA novels, the fantasy series?
No, I have not. They've been on my list for a minute. Do you have something in mind in particular?
Well, it's a theory, so you have to read them in order. So start with An Ember in the Ashes. Okay. I read the first two or three, but I had never read the final book. And now I'm like, why haven't I not picked up that final book? Like, I need to go do that. So I might be feeling inspired to go finish out the Ember in the Ashes series now.
I'm definitely, like you said, the line level writing. Like, I have the book here. I was ready to, like, read some lines or something if we had the time. I was like, yeah, I got a couple things underlined. So,
yes,
that level of writing, it's getting bumped up my TBR. Anything by her. Absolutely.
Yes, definitely. So hopefully we get some more great books from Sabaa Tahir sometime in the future. But I guess in the meantime, we should wrap this up. Otherwise, we're going to go way over, which is very easy for us to do.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much for tuning in. Please feel free to leave us feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It lets us know how we're doing, but also helps others find us. And if you want to email us directly, you can always do that at heyya@bookriot.com. Don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and all things bookish. Thank you to today's sponsors for helping make this show possible. And thanks, as always, to our awesome audio editor, Jen Sink. You can follow me. I hang out on Twitter and Instagram at Tears of Price. And how about you, Erica?
I'm on Twitter at @Erica_EZE_.
Awesome. Well, we will be back to chat with you in a couple of weeks. It will be Poetry Week, or Poetry Ooh. Week, Poetry Month. Poetry. So I believe we're talking about novels in verse.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. That's coming up. But yeah, in the meantime, happy reading.
Happy reading.